We are almost out of time without a hat in time, and Darwin is working on a new project that will bring us Guides of Axiom. It's episode 137 of Indie Game Riot.
Indie Game Riot!
Hey everybody, this is Josh, and I'm here again with Eric Hunter. Put the M in the middle, or else you'll get a porn star.
That's true.
That's your nickname. Eric, not the porn star, Hunter. We don't need the M anymore. I think it works better.
Because the M doesn't stand for massive anything. It
stands for masturbate.
Alone, using my own tears as lubrication.
Masturbate alone. Eric M.A. Hunter. That makes you sound educated. Oh,
there you go.
Anyway, we're here. We've got a lot of news. First of all, let me apologize. And normally I would defer to you to start this, but I'm gonna start with me because I want to apologize for the past 2 weeks. I was busy, a lot of time and energy putting into the into a voiceover thing. If you didn't know, I got out of like 515 auditions, I was chosen as one of 30 people to go to New York to do this special audition contest, where you could win. You could basically, if you win, you're the voice of a major news channel in New York. You get like a microphone. You get signed with a talent agency and all that stuff. I did not win, but it was still cool. Yeah, there's always next time. I can do it again, and I can. I mean, it was still a cool experience. I got to go to New York, which is always good.
Did you place at all? Like, did they say like, oh, you were number blah 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 out of 1,000?
No. I mean, I was in the 30 out of 515, but then after that, they whittle it down to 6.
Did they say that you were number one in their hearts?
I wish. Although the cool thing though is that I got to meet some really cool people. Bob Bergen was there. He's the voice of Porky Pig. We were just talking about before the show started recording. The Walking Dead, Dave Fennoy was there, who played the main guy from the first one, and Pat Fraley, who does a shit ton of animation. If you've watched Nickelodeon at all, you've heard Pat Fraley. Like he does Krang in the original Ninja Turtles, and he was the cat from Fievel Goes West. He's in DuckTales and stuff like that. So Disney too, I guess. And the really cool thing too was that my audition that I did when I got there, and I didn't find out about this until like a few minutes before I did my audition, which was nerve-wracking, but Nancy Cartwright was one of the judges. I literally stood 5 feet in front of her and three other voice actors who were
that's great, man.
Commercials and got judged by them. And it was a confidence boost when I did. I was bummed afterwards when I didn't win, but when I did the audition, it was a confidence boost because like three out of the four judges were like, that was really good. We don't really have any adjustments because you get two takes to do it. Nancy Cartwright was the only one to give me a thing, and it wasn't anything bad. It was just like, I just want to hear more. I just want to hear you bring out the story of the script more. And I did a second take. She was a good, really good adjustment. So I felt good about it.
Oh, man.
In front of Nancy Cartwright and the other people.
Yeah, so, I mean, shit.
If you don't know who Nancy Cartwright is, she does the voice of Bart Simpson and several other Simpsons characters.
Yep.
Other cartoons though, but of course that's what she's most famous for. So that was really cool being around people that, you know, I've heard as a child, you know, and are making it big today still. So
very cool, man. Congratulations. That's huge.
So
I mean, that's
here's
that's
to hoping it works out more. And but anyway, that's what's been going on in the past couple of weeks. And why I've been kind of behind and haven't done the show. But we're back. and hire me.
If you're looking for voice acting, like fancy like tournaments and like getting picked for games, like I just want to voice a episode of Did You Know Gaming. That's all I want to do.
Hey man, I'll do that. Oh, you want to do it? No, yeah, fuck you. It's my job. How's your 2 weeks been?
It's been good. So had the birthday, did Halloween. That was fun. I beat Mario Odyssey.
You beat it already? How long does it take?
So I did a very bare bones run of this game. Like I got the bare minimum of everything, just so I wanted to go everywhere as quickly as possible. So like it probably took maybe like yes.
I saw the completionist episode of that and how much shit is in there. It's a lot. Yeah. It's like 70 some hours worth.
It's way more than I'm ever gonna put in.
Yeah.
Like I beat the game probably like 6 to 7 hours. And then I was like, oh, I'm gonna go back and start getting everything. And then I realized I was like, they do a pretty good job of giving you a list of interesting phrases that would relate to where a certain moon would be, and it's like, oh, I'll get all of these moons, and then you realize that there's 50 other moons that aren't listed, and I'm like, well, I need a fucking guide.
I heard some of them were just like overly easy to get, like, hey, sit,
like you're just walking down the street and it's like, oh, there's a moon,
like literally there's one like sit on this bench.
yep that's one. Playing jump rope, that's another one. There's a lot of those. So I think I did that for like maybe 3 worlds, and there's like
like
11 or 12, and I was like, I think I'm done playing this game, and I put it down yesterday and I haven't picked it up. So it's a great game if you like Mario games. It's definitely a Mario game.
It's AAA trash, Eric.
No, I think it actually proves a pretty good point that jumping in 3D space is fucking terrible. And I think Mario Odyssey does it the best, and it's still bad.
Well, interestingly enough, to kind of bring it home, when we get to Starting a Riot,
it's true.
When we get to Starting a Riot, we've got a 3D platform we're going to talk about. So
I'm going
to
guess it's probably not that good.
Yeah. I don't know.
I think it's so good. It'll be good enough.
It'll be good. I think it'll be good. Anything else you did over the past 2 weeks?
Some bad decisions. I've made some bad decisions in life.
Yeah.
Nothing I want to get into here, but
you have an STD?
Just know that I'm an imperfect human being.
You have an STD? You have an STD.
It's standard death, man. I can't get rid of it. Like, it's just the worst.
Well played. Well, you know what's high def?
News.
High definition news. I don't know what the fuck that means, but we're going into it. Indie News Injection.
Are you bored with the same old games?
Yeah.
Why, then give yourself an Indie News Injection.
Thanks, Indie Games.
All right, let's get started with the news. Shall we?
Yeah. Good. I'm waiting on you, man.
So this one's not really news. It's just something that I found online that it kind of made me giggle. So there's a game on Steam currently. I think it's still on Steam. It is. It's called Glitch Simulator 2018. Currently, it retails for $2.99. A user of Steam that goes by the name I Am Patty Jack wrote a review, and the review is actually kind of comical. So the review starts off as, Glitch Simulator is such a lazy Game Guru engine project that I literally remade the entire game in under 15 minutes. And then he goes on and proceeds to tell you and show you video of the game that he created, which is identical to Glitch Simulator for 2018 that he is giving away for free on itch.io, called Smorsh Simulator 2018. And the reason I thought this was funny, because I think it's funny, the other thing I find is that it shows the state of indie games where practically anybody and everybody is putting, can put trash up on Steam and get it through the curation page, or not the curation page, what is it called now? Steam Direct.
Well, if you got the $100 to pony up, yeah.
Yeah,
but
which,
the point,
I mean,
but the point they were trying to do is integrate that with curators and have it get buried.
Right.
That was the point, so.
Yeah. I just thought that was kind of funny.
Well, So, first of all, it reminds me a lot of Goat Simulator. The whole thing was made as a joke, which this obviously was. I mean, the fact that he pointed it out is like, this is stupid shit. Which, for a long time, I hated Goat Simulator, and then they actually started adding to it and started making more like a game. I'm like, okay, I get it now. But yeah, that's basically what this is. But this kind of goes into a larger issue that we're not going to really have an expanded conversation on, but we might as well just talk about it since we have it in the news, is the whole Steam getting rid of a lot of the shovelware.
Correct.
Which I'm surprised they... I mean, I guess this came in after their purge.
So their purge was mainly of just like a single developer who was running under two different names. And that purge was, I mean, they released like 300 games in a year under one of the dev names. Yeah.
So it was only specifically that.
Correct. Yeah. But it was so much, in fact, that like the developer came out and I think spoke to Polygon maybe and stated that they had to close their quote unquote doors because they couldn't afford, you know, to keep them open when Steam like tore down all of their games. And
I would feel bad if they were trying to make it legit.
Right.
You know,
because it's like, you know,
what is shovelware?
Bullshit here?
Like what is, I mean, that was, it's pretty obvious that was shovelware that they were pushing out 300 fucking games in a year.
Right.
But what is shovelware? Because is it bad games or is it games that, you know, I mean, it's, what it is that games are purposely put out there, but it's hard to tell if it's just a bad game that someone's just trying, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I don't mind that because I don't want to stunt people's creativity and, you know, people have to get started somehow, if they want to get into games, you know, the first game's not always going to be great. You know, and if it's bad, it's bad, but then they try again, they get better, that sort of thing. So,
well, I think the thing comes down to like, should you be charging people money for this? Like, how much real time and effort did you put into creating this game, and do you really justify being paid for...
Glitch Simulator is a different story. I mean, it's obviously shovelware, but it's in a practical joke sort of way. If you remember that Kickstarter for, like, what was it, a salad or some bullshit?
Oh, yeah, potato salad.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's kind of like that. I mean, they're charging money just because they're like, let's see how stupid people are. You know what I mean? And that's... And obviously, people are stupid, fucking stupid enough to... apparently
pay for it. Salad. Yep.
Yeah, it has some comments though. Stop hating. I love this game. It was fun. So, you know, whatever. I guess.
I think it's interesting both ways. Like, I feel like, well, that's the other thing too. Like this guy. So this guy claims that he practically created this game in under 15 minutes. Okay, so did he? Nobody really knows for sure. We have to take his word for it. And on top of that, it may have taken him 15 minutes with a engine and language that he's extremely familiar with. So he knows exactly what to do and what to look for. Whereas this developer may have spent months just trying to learn the engine in terms of making this game. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like, so is it justified? No, but I also think it's an interesting point to make that it's possible because, I mean, you look at some games and like there's no way you could remake that game in 15 minutes, and that could mean either that because the like the tools are becoming extremely easy to use, or it's because
or like Flappy Bird where someone basically put it down to what, 6 lines of code?
Yep.
Something like that.
Yeah, so I mean it could be just maybe he like, oh, well, like I was saying before, like it could be that this the original developer of Glitch Simulator, you know, spend months just trying to learn the engine, and then once they learn the engine, then they could go back and create the game, where this guy already knew the engine and was very familiar with it, and that he could make this game in 15 minutes. The exact same idea with Flappy Bird. Like, that developer could have took him months to make that game because he was still learning how to use it, where somebody who was familiar with it could do it in 6 lines of code.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think it's... I feel like a game like this, there's not a whole lot on the surface to begin with.
Do you think he was making a statement, or was he just being a dumbass?
I think he was just trying to make some money, because if you go back and you look at the other games that he's created, He has a game called ISIS Simulator. He has a game that's called Suicide Simulator.
Didn't those get like shit way back when? I forget. They sound familiar.
But all of these games act fairly similar to each other. Like, they're all first-person shooters made with the exact same engine, and he's charging $2.99 for every single game.
Yeah, I mean, to put a bow on this, because we have a lot of news to go through, but there's a lot. I mean, we've talked about it before with bad games or even just Kickstarters that don't follow through and stuff like that. It really comes down to, especially nowadays, it comes down to, I mean, yeah, they shouldn't be putting shitty games out necessarily, shovelware, but do your due diligence. It isn't really that hard. I mean, it's annoying to have to wade through crap, but it's not really that hard to just, like, look at it, look at some reviews, look at some gameplay now, and right. be like, hey, this is a shitty game. I'm not going to buy it. So, I mean, just... Right. Just do your research if you're not sure about the possible shitty games. Something that's not shitty is RPG Maker. The people that make RPG Maker are now... I should have put the picture for this up, but it didn't. Are now making a thing called Visual Novel Maker. VN Maker is what they're calling it. So instead of RPGs, you're making, you know, actually it's kind of a growing genre now in indie games, is these interactive graphic novels, basically. So if you're an artist and a writer, this basically helps you make a game without having to know a whole lot of code, although I'm much like the RPG Maker, I'm sure you could dive into it and mess with it a lot. Dean, who I'm not sure if is in the chat or not, but he basically, for his game Vidar, gutted RPG Maker and just made it his own, essentially.
Nice.
So but the point is that it's open to all kinds of levels of skill for people making games. And we talked about people starting to make games. This might be the thing for you, especially if you're leaning towards art and writing instead of game code, like I am. Well, not art, but writing for me. VN Maker, Visual Novel Maker is they're calling it a tool for visual novel creation aimed towards aspiring artists and writers. And it comes with, like, much like RPG Maker, comes with basic assets. So you can fill in, like, if it's just you and you're a writer, like me, you can fill in characters, background, sound effects, all that sort of stuff. And it's all point and drag if you wanted to, or you can also dig into it, like I said. They're also going to, again, much like RPG Maker, add a whole bunch of DLC packages for assets, if that's what you're into. I don't know how I feel about that personally, but then, you know, that's how they really make their money in the long run anyway.
Right.
So, if you're into visual novels, if you're looking to getting into game creation, this may be for you. You hear that, Eric? Maybe for you. Although you probably know more about coding than I do.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know what you're going on about. No, I think this is great just because it gives people more options. So, like, the only two I can really think about right now that are like these visual novels are RenPy and I guess Twine, I guess, would be considered something like that too. But, yeah.
Twine's but more of like a visual mapper, but it works in the same way.
Yeah. But I think having something like somebody fairly notable like RPG Maker stepping into the scene and trying to create some sort of standard, I think it's great. I think it just means more games for us. So.
That's good quality. It's going to be maybe better quality on itch.io because I think people were using a lot. There's a whole lot of visual novel type games on itch.io that I think were probably using a software that they didn't really know how to use that well, and it turns out not as good as it probably could be.
Which is probably RenPy.
So I think this will really boost the quality on platforms like that.
Totally. Speaking of itch.io,
look at that. Look at that segment.
They've added support for distributing games to Patreon backers. Which, if I were itch.io and I was trying to combat with Steam, which is I would think is what itch.io is trying to do. This is exactly what I would do. I would try to find out, like, how many bridges can we build to make it even more seamless. Do you know what I mean?
Well, Leif Corcoran, who made Itch.io, has done a really good job of progressing the platform and connecting it to all these different tools that developers can use in seamless ways like that. So, and it's kind of cool too, because it helps the community. Even if you don't have like a huge community that where like buying your game, you may not be getting a whole lot of money that way,
right?
And yet you still have like a dedicated fan base that will help support you month to month. This is really cool, and you can give them extra rewards for that. So,
yeah, and I mean, one of the features that I think Steam is missing out on is some sort of tip jar for developers, where it's like you've got this free to play game that you can download, but you can also donate or tip.
Yeah, it wouldn't be that hard to do like a pay what you want, like every other fucking platform does.
Yep.
Yeah, they should.
I agree.
I mean, it's just more money for them anyway, because you know they're going to take a chunk.
Well, true, but I mean, it's money for the developer too. Yeah. You know, it's. But no, I think this is great. I think this is when they first released their like their platform that you could download that was like independent from everything, kind of like the Steam platform, where it's like it runs independent, it keeps track of all your games and stuff like that. I was like, wow, this is really cool. And then when this came out, I was like, okay, so they know what they're doing. They just need to figure out how to like go after gamers better, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But I feel like they're doing it right by taking care of the developer first and trying to make it as easy as possible for them to get their game on their platform and try to get them paid as quickly as possible in as many ways as possible. Yeah. Which is something that fucking Steam's not doing. So.
What do you think are some good ways, like for devs that might be listening, to reward potential patrons, like and for specifically for video games? Because I mean, like we have a Patreon. Plug patreon.com/indiegameriot. But we do things like, you know, we give things away, or you know, obviously you can do things like, hey, thanks, type stuff. Back when we had people in that specific tier, we used to do that, you know, commercial before each episode that mentioned it, and we gave them that cool logo and stuff. But for a game, you know, you can't really be like, I mean, you could put them maybe in a game, give them like kind of like how Kickstarter works, but because Patreon's like a month to month basis a lot of times, you can't do that constantly. So what do you think some like unique ways that game devs could?
Man, I don't even know. I feel like there's definitely a void. Like there's definitely there's a hole that needs to be filled, with something. But I just don't know what that would be, because I feel like the system's broken. Right, the system doesn't work the way it should work. Do you know what I mean? So, like, how much? Because I know, like, what's it called? Fig. That was a fig.co. That was another kind of platform that came out where it was like, oh, now you can actually be an investor in this game. You can be a producer.
I still think Fig's a little.
Well, I feel like it's not going after the right. It's not going after gamers.
Well, going after venture capitalists.
Right. So it's like, okay, and I don't feel like Patreon.
But that's because it's owned by Double Fine, and Double Fine's basically, I mean, people still consider them indie, and we've had the argument before if they're indie or not. But the point is that they're big enough to do things like venture capitalism, and they have connections like that. So something like Fig kind of makes sense for them.
Right.
As sleazy as it makes me feel. Personally, but jeez, yeah,
it's that bad.
I don't know. I don't personally. Maybe it's just because I don't like. I don't know. I don't. I rarely side with like business, like corporate shit. But you know, so I may be biased.
Well, and so I think that's what the problem is. So it's like, okay, so how do you go after gamers? Because I don't know if you've, you know, been paying attention for the past 30 years. There's no way to appease and to make gamers happy. At the end of the day, like, it's impossible. It is absolutely impossible. Like,
this game's too good.
Well, it's, I mean, you know, we're still discussing over, you know, like, well, I just want my $60 game. Well, your $60 game is actually not worth $60 anymore. You should realize that. Like, inflation, let's move on. You know, so, like, so what can you do? Like, what can you do to make gamers happy? It's, I mean, other than just making it as easy as I put in this thing and I hit a button and it goes, there's not a whole lot you can do, you know? So I feel like with Itch.io kind of streamlining the distribution part of that, like, I feel like their platform is pretty solid. It's very point and click and very straightforward, where, you know, sometimes Steam or even maybe GameJolt kind of gets a little muddy. I think that's it, though. Like, I think that's all you can really do is, like, how do I just put, you know, more better games in your face, you know, hole, and try to, you know, relieve all the pressure? I don't know. I mean, it's...
Our Nightbot in chat's putting a smackdown on all because he was trying to...
Oh, really?
Well, Firebomb is asking for links for, like, different resources and stuff. I'll send you some links, Firebomb, in the chat. Nightbot won't let you... nor will Twitch let you put links in unless you're a mod. I'll do it in between news and the next segment.
Hey.
Well, speaking of putting the smackdown, Guacamelee, if you remember, is very fantastic. Would you call it a puzzle platformer or an action platformer?
I would call it kind of like an exploration adventure game.
Sure. It's a game. Basically,
it
you play.
It is a game.
It is a game. Guacamelee, you play as a luchador, and you try and make it through. Is it the Land of the Dead? It's been a long time since I played the first
one.
Yeah,
so it's the
Land of the Dead, and you're trying to get your girlfriend back. So, anyway, they're making a second one, and it's coming out on PS4, I believe you said?
And PC.
And PC.
Yep.
Well, much like the first one. But the point is, Guacamelee 2 is coming out, so get excited if you were a fan of the first one. If it's also one of those games that, I mean, you can play it single player, and it's challenging, but if you play co-op, it's a lot of fun, but even more challenging because you end up getting in each other's way a lot. But it's a really good... probably... it's a, for me, it's a... because we always talk about like, games that would make it into the Indie Game Riot Hall of Fame. And this is a game that would probably be on the borderline for me. I don't know if it would be first ballot, but it would be probably nominated.
I mean, how long is this list? Like,
a lot of games, man.
No, I'm saying, like, how many? What's the limit of making it in?
I don't know. I haven't looked that far into the rules yet of whenever we do this, if we do it. But anyway, Guacamelee 2 is happening. Grappling Hook's Chicken Power coming to PS4 is what Eric wrote in the notes.
So the only thing that bothers me about this, because they have a trailer that you can watch, and the trailer shows gameplay and, you know, footage and cutscenes and stuff like that. It looks like it's the exact same engine,
probably,
that they used for the first one. Which, if that's the case,
but making your own engine is a lot of work and time and energy and money.
Don't make your own engine.
Do they use their own engine?
I don't think they do. I think it's some sort of Unreal or Unity.
It's probably Unity
thing. Yeah, but no, it just looks like, oh, well, it's not technically Guacamelee 2, it's Guacamelee 1.5. That's kind of how
I looked
at it.
Like, the sequel, because it's just it's more like a story continuation. Probably new mechanics, I would imagine.
Well, there was already 1,000 sequels, because there's like Super Guacamelee and Super Guacamelee Tournament
Edition.
Those
are like,
and all that.
They're not sequels, they're just remakes.
Sequels, I don't know, Street Fighter 2, Street Fighter 2 Turbo, Super Street Fighter 2, sequels.
Lame.
Talking about sequels.
By the way, the developer for Guacamelee is Drinkbox Studios.
I do like Drinkbox.
Another game coming out, Eric.
Spelunky 2 got announced. Yeah. So that's going to happen. The trailer is...
You don't sound very excited.
I'm not a big Spelunky fan, so this doesn't mean too much
for
me.
You're not a big fan of most things.
That's not true. Like what?
I don't know. Everything.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Interesting enough, this game is also coming to PlayStation 4 and PC only. So that makes me wonder.
Ooh, Xbox, you got some challengers.
So the trailer shows the protagonist.
They hoard Cuphead, and now everyone's just like...
See what happens? Yeah. See what happens? it shows the protagonist kind of passing down his... whatever to his kids.
Do you think it's going to be more like? Do you think it's going to be more like an Indiana Jones sequel, or I don't know, the Holy Grail, or is it going to be more like Crystal Skull?
So I haven't seen Crystal Skull.
Oh my God, you're lucky.
I've only heard about it. So, quick aside. So, I went on this weird rant. Well, yeah, I guess it's a rant, basically, where I was like, I need to own the Indiana Jones movies. Why don't I own the Indiana Jones movies? So, we went to the, I guess it was Walmart or whatever, and I found the movies independently, like, wasn't like in a box set or anything, but all the box art looked the same. So I was like, okay, these clearly all go together, but there was no Crystal Skull. I was like, well, I've got to get Crystal Skull, and then we'll just have a movie marathon. We'll watch all the Indiana Jones movies. So I bought Crystal Skull on Amazon.
Best to just make sure it doesn't exist. Let's just pretend.
Right. Well, so I bought Crystal Skull on Amazon that had similar box art as the other three. So it made it look like they all went together. And then me and my wife proceeded to watch an Indiana Jones movie, you know, consecutively day after day. And then we got the Crystal Skull, and I was like, let's watch something else. So that is that's one of the very few movies that are sitting on my shelf that is still wrapped in plastic.
Dodge the bullet, sir.
Yeah. I want to see it. It's just I haven't seen it.
So we were talking about, yeah, so Moss Mouth makes that game, and yeah.
Yeah, what's his name? David Young? David Yu? David,
well, you named the studio Moss Mouth, didn't you?
Ooh. I think. Yeah. What's that got to do with anything?
Well, anyway, we were talking about other resources for devs earlier. So, Game Maker Studio 2 is getting an Xbox Live support. So, you know, Game Maker Studio, obviously, mostly people use it for PC games. But now they're finally making it more available for consoles, which I know Eric is excited about because he's definitely a console gamer more than most. Yeah. I mean, that provides a lot more opportunity for indies coming to Xbox in this case.
Well, because that's always the biggest problem, right? It's just porting, you know, because porting takes time.
Well, it's
also
fucking expensive.
Exactly. And it's one of those things where I had mentioned it before, but with... shit. What's the name of the game? Toby Fox's game. What's that game
Undertale.
Called?
Undertale.
Yeah, I still have yet to play Undertale. I probably never will. But so that was the first thing. Like when Undertale came out, everybody was like, "Oh my god, are you going to port this to like PlayStation?"
Send
Xbox?
All angry like, hate mail to Eric@IndieGameRiot.com.
There you go. I'll never.
It's not the sort of thing you say out loud on the internet.
Oh man, have you met me? But so he went out on Twitter and because somebody asked him if he was going to port his game to PlayStation 4 or Xbox One, and he was like, "Oh no, it, you know the language doesn't move over. It's you know it's very difficult. Like we would basically have to rewrite the entire game." And I'm like, "Yeah, just wait till somebody throws a big bag of money in front of you, then you'll figure a way how to do it." And guess what happened? Sony threw a big bag of money at him. They ported the game. So I think at the end of the day, it's all about exposure. So if these developers they use game tools that allow them to get more exposure, I think at the end of the day, it's better for everybody. But then again, you also run into the situation that Steam's running into right now, which is there's very little curation and there's a lot of shovelware.
Do you think that's something that might be an option? Because you know how there's a lot of the programs that developers use, like Game Maker, you can do it for PC, obviously, but it also like pretty much automatically ports to mobile as well.
Yep.
Do you think that they'll have that? I mean, they have the support to get to console, but do you think they'll have an option where it'll automatically port to console? If that makes sense,
no.
Like it'll. You know, what I mean?
Like,
or is that too complicated?
Publish kind of a thing, or
yeah, basically.
No, that'll never happen.
Too,
I think that's one of the few things that is kind of gatekeeping consoles and making it feel like it's a unique experience is because there are so many people involved that are either you know saying no or saying yes or allowing things to go through. Like, I know one of the consoles that gets brought up all the time in terms of shovelware is the Nintendo Wii. There's a lot of shovelware for that game or that console. One of the reasons why is because Nintendo, towards the later years of the console's life cycle, kind of like stepped away from all of that, and they were letting you know a lot of shit go through just because they weren't looking at it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons why the Switch has been doing so well. is because all of these indie titles that are on their eShop and all of the games that have been released for the Switch have been furiously curated through Nintendo. And I think, obviously, that has a lot to do with the success, you know, because they're not just allowing anything and everything. Like, they're trying to find value.
You know, it seems like they're trying to make it more accessible on the console end of things, too. I mean, we talked about that, I think, last episode with the Switch and how they finally have made it more friendly to devs to port over to the Switch, to Nintendo in general, because
right.
Wii was fucking awful to port to. So maybe what's happening here is that finally the old white people at, you know, these corporations for Sony and Xbox and all that stuff are like, well, right. Maybe we're actually making money from these. From these indie games, so between the awesome programs that are pushing towards, you know, opening it up as much as possible to consoles and everything else, and the consoles finally getting it more friendly to them, maybe they're going to meet in the middle somewhere where eventually it will be just like, you know, how it is with PC, where you're just like, boom, there it is.
Yep.
So, you know, we'll hope.
Well, I mean, that's the problem, though, right? Because it's scary. Like, the indie gaming community and the catalog is scary.
You know, like, what else is scary? Not to cut you off.
No.
Runic Games shut it down.
Man.
This is upsetting,
heartbroken.
Actually. Yeah, the next couple of news stories are pretty, they're pretty sad.
So heartbroken.
If you don't know Runic, they made Torchlight, Torchlight 2, and Hob, I think, was the newest one that they came out with.
Yeah, it didn't do so well.
Yeah, I didn't hear much about that, but Torchlight and Torchlight 2 are amazing games. Action RPGs, isometric, top-down type thing. And pretty similar to Diablo. As a matter of fact, I think the people that made Runic kind of came from Diablo, if I'm not mistaken.
So it was, yeah, so there was a couple of developers who moved in, but that was the whole idea, is they were trying to, they created Torchlight so that they could create a Diablo-esque MMO.
Yeah.
And it never came to be, and they ended up just making Torchlight 2.
And then they made Diablo 3, which is a Diablo-esque MMO.
Exactly. So it was, I mean, I love Torchlight. I enjoyed playing Torchlight from start to finish. I enjoyed playing Torchlight 2 from start to finish. And I'm excited to play Hob, but man, I mean, like, three games in your belt and they cut it, like,
three, two and a half successful games.
True.
I mean, Hob got very some good coverage. Games. Yeah. I mean, Torchlight is, again, one of those games that might end up in a indie game Hall of Fame. So that's
how
sad
long
news.
Is this list? Why are we even debating this? The game should just be there. I don't understand.
We can. That's another project for you and I to talk about. It's just the logistics of that. anyway, you want to take the other sad piece of news?
The other sad piece of news is Deck Splash. Is it Bossa? Is that how you pronounce it?
I always said Bossa.
Bossa? You're probably right. It's probably Bossa.
Okay. I mean, it is. I mean, technically, the way it's spelled, it should be Bossa.
I'm just bad with names, as you know. So I don't even try anymore. I just assume it's wrong when I say it. The Deck Splash, the multiplayer skateboarding sim, has been canceled.
It's sad because it is basically, I mean, I guess nowadays you would compare it to maybe Splatoon in a way that, like, you skate around. There was, I mean, it wasn't the only mode, but, like, the main thing was, like, the whole, you know, you do tricks and paint. And if you remember the old Tony Hawk games, I don't know how old you folks out in the audience are, but...
How old are you folks out in the audience?
Back in my day on the PS1, there was a Tony Hawk game that was actually good.
It's very good.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I would say the first 4 to 6 Tony Hawk games were pretty good. But anyway, they had this mode called Graffiti Mode, where you would do tricks in certain areas, and if you do the highest score on that particular area, would then tag it in your team's color.
Yep.
And whoever has the most areas wins. And that's what Deck Splash was a lot like, except much more stylistic. And if you don't know who Bossa or Bossa, however you want to pronounce their name is, they made I Am Bread and Surgeon Simulator, all that sort of stuff. Firebomb is 38. He does remember. Yes, he would remember them. Fantastic. I love Tony Hawk games. Talking about nostalgia. Anyway, But unfortunately, they said that they wanted to attract at least 100,000 players during the first free week in November, starting on November 2nd.
Which is crazy.
Or else the whole thing would get canceled. And lo and behold, they did not, and therefore are canceling it.
Yeah.
100,000, even for a popular studio like them, is a lot. Especially in the first week.
I mean,
that's a lot.
So I'm wondering who was really pushing the buttons here.
Well, I kind of get it, because you want your community to be thriving. Otherwise, it's just going to end up dead, right? And you're going to waste the money to have these servers and, you know, the whole multiplayer
thing.
Okay,
well, then make it a P2P, then. Like, make it so you have to host your own server.
Yeah. I mean, that's annoying. But, I mean, or you can make it a one-player game and then have multiplayer on the side.
Something.
You know, make it worthwhile. Don't just completely... 100,000 is a lot, even for a popular studio. But it is what it is. That's what they said. I think they ended up a little under 60,000, they said.
Which is amazing.
That's pretty damn good for the first week of your game. But, you know, it sucks. Anyway. There's one more. That's right. Last piece of news is that Valve is overhauling their curator system to help streamline key distribution, which is cool. Put this in here because that obviously affects a lot of indie devs. One big complaint is, you know, especially between with the reselling of keys and all that sort of stuff. This way you can find reputable curators like Indie Game Riot. And and send. I think we're getting close to 1,000 followers on Steam Curator, which is pretty cool.
Good.
But you can find reputable curators and send them keys that way, without just hoping for the best, like sending them out to these random email addresses.
Yeah, that's what I was always worried about, was like those other sites that it's like, no, just submit your information and we'll make sure it gets done. I'm like, nope.
There's tools out there like Rami Ismail made Distribute, or Do Distribute, I think is technically what it's called, and which is like a thing that you can use to send it to verified outlets and stuff like that, or verified content creators. But it's still always shady, because I mean there's only so much you know, of a background check that you can do on someone.
True.
I mean, we obviously don't do this, but technically, even though we have our show, we have our site, and we have like emails that aren't at Gmail or something like that. You know, we have official website emails. We could still technically be selling games on the side to like G2A or some bullshit. So you just never know.
True.
We don't. You can trust us, and you can ask anyone who has sent us games and stuff like that before. But the point is that it's a possibility. And to be honest, studios that don't know us, because you know we're not fucking IGN or anything like that. I've been told straight out, like, we don't know you, which is fine. I get it. But people are afraid, especially with the whole G2A controversy. But this is a cool step that they're taking with Steam curators and kind of centralizing the whole Steam key, just keeping it, they're containing it within Valve, sending Steam keys within Steam, which is pretty cool. Although, I'm afraid that it's going to like start doing that whole, the issue with where basically like giving keys away for good reviews type of thing.
Right. Well, at something like this, like, I think that, and this is going to sound extremely counterintuitive, but I feel like allowing the public to dictate that is probably the best thing to do. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I'm sure this will also go into that, like we mentioned, them trying to use curators to bury shovelware and bring good games to the top. And this will probably be a part of that whole deal anyway. Where you send your keys to these curators, and therefore they like look at them like, oh, this is a good game, and therefore it raises to the top. So I personally am happy about this particular change that they're making.
It's something, right?
Yes.
Like if I was Valve at this point, like I'd be firebombing all kinds of ideas. You know, like, hey, let's try this. And you go for a couple of days and like, well, fuck, that didn't work. All right, let's turn that off. Let's try this now. Like,
well, they would get so much backlash, though. They can't do that.
Man, like, until they hit on something that was worth it.
Yeah.
And then if they hit on it and it's like, well, now what? Because now they're fucking back on top of the world again. So,
well, you know what else is on top of the world?
My balls in your chin. Oh, no. Well, we're starting a riot.
Yeah. The game is starting the riot.
In this episode of Starting a Riot, we are talking about A Hat in Time, developed by Gears for Breakfast. A Hat in Time is a what?
Gears for Breakfast. Is that right?
Gears for Breakfast. It's delicious.
I'll say yum.
Hat in Time, according to Steam, is a cute as heck 3D platformer featuring a little girl who stitches hats for wicked powers.
They should have, for comedic effect, just said it. Maybe it's because I imagined my head as a voiceover, but it should have been like, cute as fuck, you know?
Oh, I see what you're saying. I don't know
why. Sorry, stupid thoughts. Go ahead.
It's a terrible idea. Anyway, so this game has an interesting story. It started off as a kind of just like as a fan project with a single developer who ended up having other developers kind of come on, graphic artists, that kind of thing. They enjoyed the idea. They thought it would be something fun to create. And then it got to a point where it's like, wow, this is actually becoming like a game that could be viable in the market. So they decided to go to a Steam page where I want to say the amount that it hit was like astronomical.
It did
almost $300,000 on a goal of $30,000.
Yeah.
So that's ridiculous. The game was in production for a while, I think like 3 or 4 years, which is kind of interesting because Yooka-Laylee kind of came and went while this game was still in development.
Well, two things to that is that Yooka-Laylee had very experienced depth
True.
Behind it. But right. The other thing is, I mean, is it really a while? Because, I mean, when you think about the good games that come out now, especially off of Kickstarter, it ends up taking
True.
3 to 5 years for most games, you know what I mean? So
yeah, I mean, I could still say a while.
Well, yeah.
So the interesting mechanic of this game is the hats, obviously. So the hats are the things that give you the abilities. It's not just something that you kind of gain over time. You can swap hats out. You can upgrade hats. From what I remember reading, the biggest criticism is the game has like a weird stopping point where one of the levels, or one of the worlds, I guess you could call it, becomes like a murder train mystery thing. And it's not just a 3D romp through a world where you're collecting stuff. But other than that, the game's gotten pretty good praise.
Would you have preferred it to be a collectathon like Banjo-Kazooie style?
Probably not, just because somebody who owns Banjo-Kazooie could just easily go and play Banjo-Kazooie if I want to collect the thon game. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier about Mario Odyssey. It's like, yeah, there's a thousand moons that you can collect. I was gonna say download, and that's not right. There's 1,000 moons you can collect, and there's like, you know, 50 to 100 coins, purple coins or purple whatever in every level, and it's like, and I already did all of this stuff once. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, I don't have the ambition to do it again unless if I go back to that original game of Banjo-Kazooie and do it again with Banjo-Kazooie. So,
well, this first identifies itself first and foremost as a 3D platformer, which I know you have your own problems with in itself. But I think they did it pretty well, impressively so for being, you know, in a hodgepodge of different developers and stuff like that.
I think they had fun.
Yeah.
And I think that shows where with a game like Yooka-Laylee, I think they were like,
well, that
they
was
were so
they were so hell-bent on the nostalgia for that.
Yep. And they were hell-bent on recreating that. It's that they forgot about how
aggravating that camera was in Banjo-Kazooie.
Exactly. And how things have changed. And they did a little bit where like they brought in like certain like cooldown meters and stuff rather than having to go and recollect you know, like objects to throw, things like that. So they added a little bit of like what I would consider quote unquote modern day gaming mechanics, but they also forgot that these games are supposed to be, you're supposed to be able to get lost in the world and just have a fun romp through it, you know.
What's refreshing about this game, because you mentioned Lost in the World, is that, you know, just seeing gameplay, it feels like this is a world, you know what I mean? A lot of times indie games, because of, you know, lack of resources usually, or maybe lack of experience, is that it feels empty a lot of times. And they make this feel... not empty. I was going to say alive, but I don't know if that's really the right word because it's so cartoony.
Lived but, in? You mean like
yeah,
lived in?
Yeah. And you know, it feels almost cozy, some of these. Which I mean,
isn't it? Isn't it supposed to be like comfort food?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, especially for people in our generation of gaming. The other thing that's nice and refreshing, we're old, but actually, you know what? Yeah, you're older than me. Anyway, the other thing that's refreshing is how colorful this is. Mm-hmm. And how happy it is, because
the art style is very well done.
Everything nowadays is so fucking sepia, or you know, just like
drab and dark,
nuclear waste. And I appreciate the color palette in this game also, and how I know they were purposely making it cutesy, but I appreciate the cutesiness.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah,
it's a breath of fresh air nowadays. I mean, it's like, I don't know how many times I've played games, any game, where it's like, oh, you need to adjust the brightness so that you can barely see the logo. Like, fuck that. This thing's going all the way up because I want to see what the hell I'm looking at.
I had to do that. I got Infamous, the newest Infamous game.
Second Son?
Yeah, Second Son. And I had to do that. That's a game that has a lot of color in it because like the neon and that sort of stuff, but there are moments where it's like so dark that I can't see where I'm walking.
I just don't see what the point of that is. I understand like there's some sort of like, oh, we want it to be kind of like mysterious and scary. It's like, then write a better game. Like, write a better story then. Jesus, like, it shouldn't have anything to do with the lighting.
Well, you know,
like,
it's cool.
That's a terrible idea.
And speaking of, you know, going back to indies too, is that there's some indie games that are horrors. You know, they're horror genre games and they're purposely making them pop out with color while simultaneously making it still scary. As a matter of fact, I mentioned Tether, and not to say Tether is a bright game, but one of the things that they are specifically trying to do, and they're actively trying to do, is making it adding color to it so it's not just fucking metallic, you know, alien, right. You know, like it's fucking Alien Isolation again or something like that, you know what I mean? So, again, the chances that these indies take on the style as well as gameplay is always nice, and AAA should pay attention.
Well, that's the thing, right? It's not just a one and done. You know, like it's everything. You know, I think that's Resident Evil 7 when that one came out. Like, that game was terrifying because one, the story was fucking terrifying, and they put you in very terrifying situations and they forced you to fight your way out. Like, that's what makes a game scary. Not like, I mean, we you mentioned this before when we were making jokes about FNAF or Five Nights at Freddy's, where the reason that, in my opinion, the game was so popular is because it took the idea of a jump scare and it turned it to 11.
Yeah.
And it just wouldn't stop. Like, it was non-stop jump scares, and it's like there really hasn't been anything
like a heart attack.
Right. Well, and because there really hasn't been anything like that, because lo and behold, that is a shitty game mechanic.
Yeah.
But it was good for this short amount of time. Like, I don't see that resurgence anytime soon. But again, at the end of the day, what ends up being the most important aspect is story. So don't shortcut your story. You know what I mean? Like,
the design in this game is cool too. I mean, outside of the feel of the city that this is in the gameplay, about being cozy and nice and colorful, I like how they went vertical, and how you have these moments where you're on top of these high-rise platforms, and you can look down on everything, and it looks so scenic.
Yep.
And colorful. I good job. Good job, Gears for Breakfast. Gears, part of the balanced breakfast.
There you go.
Taking place at Wheaties. How much is this on Steam? Were you able to
It retails for $29.99. On Steam, I don't think it's on sale at the moment. No, it doesn't look like it. And then if you go to their website, you can get it through Humble, and you can, if you want, you can do some sort of like tip additional to the developer. So
we'll do it on Humble then. Cool.
Yeah, you might as well. I mean, $29 anyway. Yeah, $29. Actually, I probably would have pushed for $39.99 for a game like this. But that's just me.
Yeah, that's a whole other discussion. Well, you know what else is a whole other discussion?
Peep Show. The dirty, peep dirty show. Peep Show.
Yeah.
Please give all your attention to Early Access.
This week on Peep Show, we are going full Darwin with Darwin Project by Scavengers Studio. Darwin Project, we normally cover games that are released in Early Access on Steam or in Kickstarter. This game is in neither. It is actually currently in alpha, and you can sign up for their newsletter to like win, I guess they periodically hand out alpha codes. But this is a battle royale game that... So, you know, in the lines of PUBG or Fortnite from Epic or The Culling, if you remember that game, we talked about that.
Oh, yeah.
So those kinds of games. But this is, and I mentioned before we started recording, that the whole Battle Royale thing, especially with the success of PUBG, is very quickly becoming saturated with games. You know, people,
it's the games are
literally, their games are literally taking like a sharp turn from what they were originally planning on, you know, aka Fortnite, to focus on Battle Royale now.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes it works, but I mean, Battle Royale is fun, but, you know, it has its issues. PUBG, same thing. I mean, it's becoming that next PUBG, the popularity of PUBG, is basically, you're going to see a shit ton of games coming out for this.
I give it 2 more years.
Yeah. That's over. The Darwin Project, though, excuse me, the Darwin Project, I like because they're taking a genre that's being so bandwagoned, is that a word?
Sure.
And adding cool mechanics to it. So, for instance, one of the players, I think one of the people in the match... I believe can be like the matchmaker, like the basically, if you think Hunger Games, which ultimately is the beginning of this genre, I guess you right. could say.
Well, no, Battle Royale would be.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah. And then Hunger Games, and that, then everything else. Movie. Yeah.
But basically, they're taking. If you remember the Hunger Games, they're basically. I think one person can be the game master. I think if I'm not mistaken, and then. There's another cool mechanic too. There's survival aspects to this, which I think there are other games that have kind of added that in, but
yeah, there's some crafting and stuff, it looks like.
There's crafting and stuff like that, but it's cool because you can actually like legit track your enemies, like you can find their footprints. There's like mechanics that help you hunt your enemies. There's also incentive to ally with other players and things like that. You know, it's not just letting people loose and you know, fucking murder each other, which actually can be frustrating. That was like one of Fortnite's downfalls. Is like, I don't know. I haven't played for a little while, but you know, you get dropped, and if you happen to be in with a whole lot of other people, you better be lucky and be the first one to find a gun because your ass is done. So there's incentive here to spread out or to team up and wait until the end to murder each other, I guess. But at the same time, that had some interesting drama, some backstabbing. I think this would be a cool game to watch streamed.
For sure.
In that sense. So that's the main reason, outside of Peep Show games surprisingly being hard to find good ones to talk about. And the main reason I put this on here is just because of how they're adding their own twist to it. And I know you're not a fan.
So I'm not. But then again, I'm not a fan of a lot of things. So, I mean, that's not, I told you. It's nothing. It's no fault on the Well, I said, you know, fucking bring it on, motherfucker. Play that game. I'll tell you this, though. I'm really digging the art style. Like, I think the art style is very well done. Like, it's kind of that... calling it low poly, I feel like, is a slap in the face, because it's not low poly. But it's a...
You know what this reminds me of a little bit? Like, it's like Battle Royale, PUBG, or whatever, mixed with The Long Dark.
Yeah.
Even in the style, the art style.
Yep, that's a good correlation. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like it's just something that's... One of these games is going to stick, right? One of these games in this PUBG Fortnite explosion is going to stick, and I don't think it's going to be either one of those games.
PUBG already sticks.
They have
competitions, you know, like pro gamers already.
True. Yeah, but 2 years from now, I mean,
I don't know about Fortnite, though. We'll see about that.
Yeah, probably not. I don't know. Okay, yeah, because it's in the same situation as Rust. Rust was one of those games where it's like, oh, it could be all of these things, and it ends up being none of those things because it tries to be too much.
Yeah,
you know?
Rust is a little different.
Yeah. DayZ, that was another one that was like, oh, we're... Well,
that
wait,
one
this
straight
is...
up fucking failed.
Yeah, so...
I don't know why that's still being a thing.
I don't know. I'm a lot more skeptical than I used to be. Like,
well, I think it's probably for the best, to be honest.
It's just because I'm old. I'm so old. No, I think... I think this is it's a good looking game. I still don't think I'll probably ever play it, but it's a good looking game. So
if
this is your thing,
if you got a free thing, if you got a free code, if you got an alpha code, you sign up for a newsletter, you get an alpha code, wouldn't you at least try it out? And immediately quit, probably.
Yeah, I don't think I... So, because that's one of the reasons why I haven't really gotten into PUBG, because it's not a game that you could just pick up and go. Like, you have to put time into the game to learn the environment, to learn how the mechanics work. Like, I was listening to a podcast earlier today, and somebody was talking about one of the big mechanics now is throwing your gun up against a wall and then catching it to make a sound, to make it sound like somebody's outside, where really you're inside the house of the wall that you're throwing it out, to make the person try to, if somebody else, like, to react in a certain way. I don't fucking want to deal with any of that stuff. Like, that just sounds like so much work.
Well, actually, I mean, Fortnite, to give it a little credit, because I played Fortnite. I've never played PUBG. I've only watched it played. To give Fortnite a little credit is that it's simplified in that sense, where you don't have to worry. It's just straight out, just go and find guns and shoot people. The difference being in that game is that environments are destructible, and
just crafting.
You can use resources to craft,
right?
Which is kind of an interesting mechanic, especially in the end game, to craft like barriers and stuff like that. You can, if you're in a standoff with someone, you can put up a wall and maybe put up a ramp, and then just kind of peek over with a sniper rifle at the end or something. Then again, people can have a bazooka and fucking blast your wall apart. So,
right.
But anyway, yeah. Darwin Project Battle Royale, but it shows a lot of promise, and I appreciate
it. Does it really
the,
does?
I appreciate the inventiveness with the mechanics, and I think it will add an interesting twist to that. Good job, Scavenger Studios. Again, it's not just yet in early access; it will be, but it's currently in alpha. And if you want to try and get into the closed alpha, you have to sign up for the newsletter on their website, which will of course be linked in the description of the recorded video, and. They might pick you to win an alpha code. Otherwise, you have to wait. Any other last thoughts on Darwin Project?
No. I just, you know.
Yeah?
I don't know, just make the game you want to make. Like, quit trying to follow trends. Like, that shit drives me insane. Like,
yeah, man.
I'll
just
never forget, like,
when...
make
the game you
want to make, man. I mean, no, seriously, though. Like, I think that's an important... That's an important note, because, like, I still remember when, like, cell phones first started to become a thing, and then all of a sudden every fucking game in the world had a cell phone in it. Like, I still remember, I think it's was it SSX, the snowboarding game. You could text your friends as you're snowboarding down a hill. Like, fucking, why would you want to do that? Like, that's something
you
would do.
The original one?
No, it wasn't the original
one. I was
going to
say, I don't
think
cell phones were a thing, really, when the original one came out.
No, I think it was, like, the second or third one. I can't remember. It was a while ago. But I just remember playing the game, and I'm thinking, like, oh, I'm getting a text message from my buddy Jughead as I'm snowboarding down this fucking hill, and I could kill myself. But no, I'm going to answer this text message, and it's only because cell phones were a popular thing. Or the silent protagonist, when that was like a when that was a thing for a while, where it's like, no, if we make the protagonist of the game silent, then the player will find themselves inside the protagonist.
They'll project themselves inside.
God, it's such a dumb fucking idea. Like,
it'll be a mind fuck.
It's the worst. Like, quit following trends and just make a game you want to play. Stop, please. God.
More Minecraft Sims.
Ooh.
You know what else we're gonna have more of?
Well, we changed it. So what do we change it to?
Mobile games. Because we're going mobile.
Oh.
This week on Going Mobile, we're talking about a game called The Guide's Axiom, which is a cool puzzle game for free, at least on Android. I actually did not check on iOS, but it is free on Android. And it's cool. It's not just your standard puzzle game, like, here, solve puzzles, you win. There's actually, like, a cool little...
cohesive story.
I guess you could call it a story. Basically, you're, like, this dude that needs to get into the system, and it starts you off... I haven't gotten too far into it, but it starts you off, like, okay, here's some, like, push these buttons, and just, like, one of those, like, little light puzzles where you have to, like, push them in the right order in order for them all to light up type of thing.
It's very, like, Escape the Room-esque.
A little bit, and then and then you start getting into this like computer system, and you have to get an access code and figure it. Basically, it's like giving you parameters without giving you direction, so you have to figure out like what it wants you to do. And then you put in your name and that sort of stuff, and it's like, well, I hope you remembered your password from the previous like two puzzles ago and that sort of thing. And you're like, oh shit, and then you can. There is a way to, like, if you forget it, there is a way to get the password, like, brought to you, basically. Like, here, but it, like, costs you, like, a hint or something like that.
Okay.
And maybe if you get into it farther, it might give you ads or something like that, but as far as I can tell, as far as I've gotten, I've not seen any ads at all, which is really cool. You know, a lot of times, you know, I have to, like, after so many puzzles, like, it pops up with a commercial or something, you have to watch for 30 seconds.
Right.
So, I appreciate that. Oh, by the way, The Guide's Axiom is by Kevin Bradford.
And it is also free on iOS.
There you go. I know a lot of times on iOS, you do have to pay, which is a whole marketing thing in itself, but...
Yeah.
Actually, you're seeing that light puzzle now that I mentioned. But I think it's probably more advanced because I think this guy's farther than I am. So, guys, are you into puzzle games like this?
These kind of puzzle games, yeah. This is my style. Like, to me, this is a tactile puzzle game where something like Tetris or Bejeweled or...
Well, it's not repetitive. Like, you're getting... I mean, there are some of the same puzzles, right, but increasing in challenge rating, basically, but... it switches it up and it gives you context with, like you mentioned, there's kind of a story type thing going on,
yeah,
where you're talking to like some sort of, I don't know if he's an IT guy or what, but saying like, hey man, I'm glad you were able to get into the system, but you know, now you need to do this. And I appreciate the fact that they did a good job designing it so that you can figure it out, like figure out what you need to do without actually telling you. A lot of times with these puzzle games, they're like, okay, well, you're staring at it, and you're like, well, I mean, I see dots, but...
Well, it becomes
like, you're, like, smacking your phone like a monkey, you know, and you're like, what?
So you run into the old-school point-and-click problems, which is like you're just trying something on everything because you have no fucking clue what you're supposed to be doing. Like, you're clicking every inch of the screen just hoping that something moves. Yeah. Which is usually the boot to the face when it comes to games like this, where there isn't that... signposting that should be there.
Yeah.
So
you know, going mobile, always a quick fun little game. Definitely suggest it, The Guide's Axiom. It's free, so it doesn't cost you anything except for maybe some
quick in and out.
There you go. That's Eric's motto.
That's
and look what happened to him.
Yeah.
Stuck with a 1-year-old. Just kidding, he loves his son.
I do.
You hear that, CPS?
Right?
Yeah. So anyway, good job, Kevin Bradford. Anything else you want to talk about The Guide's Axiom?
You should probably play it.
Do it. You know what else we gotta do?
We gotta say goodbye, right?
Yeah, we gotta end the show because that is it for this week. So, if you enjoy what we do on this show, I mentioned it earlier, but I'm gonna mention it again. Please consider going to patreon.com/indiegameriot and helping us out, helping us grow the show, get better equipment if we need it. Head to various some of the things that the funding for the Indie Game Riot would be, you know, heading to maybe some conventions to connect with other indie devs, mostly to better the show though, also to pay things like servers and hosting and all that sort of stuff, so domain name, and also things that we want to do for you guys, like giving out more free games and that sort of stuff, supporting devs in general. Money also goes towards things like IRX, Indie Revolution Expo. If you don't know what that is, go to IndieGameRiot.com and look it up. It's really cool.
It is pretty cool.
We have some really big plans for that. Other ways that you can help outside of Patreon is letting us know if there's any games that we should talk about, pieces of news that are indie-related, people that we should interview. Just mention. Just
be a part of the show.
Yeah, let us know on Twitter at IGRPodcast or Facebook.com/IGRPodcast. Of course, you can just email us at contact@indiegameriot.com. All this more on indiegameriot.com. Do you have any last words?
You should probably play some games. It's a good
play
time.
Play indie games, because we don't play no AAA trash here. I'm just kidding. AAA isn't always trash, just sometimes.
Most of the time it's trash.
We say... Triple A trash is a joke, but I'm always afraid someone who's new here's like, oh, they're so pretentious, Triple A trash, calling it trash.
Right, yeah.
You know, anyway.
Like, I don't know, have you been paying attention to this whole EA thing with the Battlefront 2? Like, it's been, it's a fucking joke.
That's
like,
ridiculous.
Yeah, that's
don't,
trash
don't,
right there.
I mean, I get indies like looking to Triple A to like, hey, you know, as a standard, but don't fucking do that shit. You hear that fucking... No. What the fuck, Ark Survival Evolved devs, don't do stupid shit.
Yeah, no, anyway. They're being controlled to do stupid shit, man. I don't think it's on them.
That is true.
So,
anyway, say your goodbye, sir.
I'm saying my goodbye, sir.
Toodles.